week. It's Good News Week.
Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Do you sometimes feel like we're drowning in bad news? Have you ever come back from vacation when you weren't paying attention to news and started reading news again online or in the paper? It really strikes you how negative most of the news is. Headlines show how celebrity-obsessed we are and how focused the media are on the sensational, lurid, and shocking things that go on. And of course, the 24-hour news cycle just expands all of that and accentuates it. So good news can be hard to find. But there's certainly plenty of it out there. You just have to look for it. That's why on American Variety, we have an occasional series that I call Good News Week. It's just me, without a guest, reading stories from around the country and the world that are upbeat, interesting, inspiring, or in some cases just goofy and kind of silly in a good way. With this being Easter weekend, I thought some good news was in order for today's show. I'm going to start with something, boy, you have to be pretty old to remember this, but back in the, I think, late 50s, maybe early 60s, Art Linkletter was the host of a show called Kids Say the Darndest Things. And he would have kids on, and they would just say the darndest things, or he would, you know, repeat things that had been kind of reported or told to him. And so this is some of those things that I've collected. These are excerpts of actual answers given on history tests and in Sunday school quizzes by children between the 5th and 6th grade ages in Ohio. And they were collected over a period of 3 years by two teachers. And I think you may agree that kids should rule the world, as it would be a laugh a minute for us adults, and therefore no time to wage war or argue if you heard a lot of these things going on all the time. Here's the first one. Ancient Egypt was old. It was inhabited by gypsies and mummies who all rode in hydraulics. They lived in the Sahara Desert. The climate of the Sahara is such that all the inhabitants have to live elsewhere. Makes sense, right? Here's another kind of biblical one. Moses led the Hebrew slaves to the Red Sea, where they made unleavened bread, which is bread made without any ingredients. Moses went up on Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandos. He died before he ever reached Canada, but the commandos made it. That was a good little summary of of something. Here's another biblical one. Solomon had 300 wives and 700 porcupines. He was an actual hysterical figure as well as being in the Bible. It sounds like he was sort of busy, too. The Greeks were a highly sculptured people, and without them we wouldn't have history. The Greeks also had myths. A myth is a young female moth. Another Greek one. Socrates was a famous old Greek teacher who went around giving people advice. They killed him. He later died from an overdose of wedlock, which is apparently poisonous. After his death, his career suffered a dramatic decline. And all right, one final Greek one. In the first Olympic Games, Greeks ran races, jumped, hurled biscuits, and threw the Java. The games were messier than they show on TV now. All right, you get the drift of those. There are a bunch more, but those are kids saying the darndest things. Here's one. I keep these things in categories, so this one's kind of from the Animal Planet stack. A goose quacked and pecked at a cop's car. When he followed her, he couldn't believe what he saw. Officer James Givens has served with the Cincinnati Police Department for over 26 years, but has never quite experienced anything like this before. He was sitting in his patrol car in a parking lot when he got an unexpected visitor. A goose came up to his car and started pecking on the side of it. He threw food out for her, thinking that's what she wanted, but she didn't take it. She continued to peck and quack, then walked away, stopped, and looked back at Officer Givens. Then she came back to his car and pecked at it again. She made it very obvious that she wanted Officer Givens to follow her, so he finally got out of his car and did just that. The goose led him 100 yards away to a grassy area near a creek. Sitting there was one of her babies, tangled up in a balloon string. He was kicking his feet, desperate for help. He was wary of helping the baby on his own, worried that the goose might attack him, so he called for help from the SPCA, but no wildlife rescuers were available at the moment. Luckily, Givens' colleague, Officer Cecilia Sharon, came to help. She began to untangle the baby, and the mother goose just stood there and watched, quacking. She didn't become aggressive and just let Officer Sharon do what she had to do to set the baby free. See, it's like the woman knew how to handle this. It's like the mother goose knew they were helping. Once she untangled the baby, she put her down, and she ran right to her mom, and they went back to swimming in the creek. Sharon teared up and said it was the highlight of her 24 years on the force. It seems like something made up. It was just incredible, Givens said. I honestly don't know why I decided to follow her, but I did. It makes me wonder, do they know how to turn to humans when they need help? We may never know the answer to this question, but what we do know is that Officer Givens was in the right place at the right time to help these geese. I would say Officer Sharon was even more in the right place at the right time. All right, so in the category of babies, which the goose was, here are a couple more baby stories. Guard punched as desperados flee with diapers. This is Dateline Spokane, Washington. Authorities in Washington state say a couple were so determined to make off with merchandise without paying that a security guard who tried to stop them got punched. The loot that was so important to the couple was a package of disposable diapers, $18 worth of diapers. Spokane County Sheriff's Sergeant Dave Reagan says a security guard tried to stop the pair as they walked out of a Safeway on Saturday with the diapers in their cart. Reagan says the man yelled, "Sorry," and then punched the guard in the face. The guard grabbed the man's shirt, but it ripped and the man was able to run away. Reagan says while that was going on, the woman made it to her SUV with the diapers and drove off, I guess leaving the man to fend for himself. All right, so that wasn't so much good news, but it was sort of semi-funny news. Let's see if we have another baby story. Delay a baby and win a second honeymoon. This is from Mumbai, India. Authorities in Western India are offering to pay for a second honeymoon for couples who delay the birth of their first child by 2 years in an attempt to control birth rates, a newspaper report said on Tuesday. The offer, called the honeymoon package, is being made by authorities in Satara district in the state of Maharashtra, the Times of India said. Couples delaying the birth of their first child by 2 years would get a honeymoon package worth 5,000 rupees and around 7,500 rupees, or this 91 pounds, if they can hold off for 3 years, it said. The money is sufficient for a couple to enjoy a second honeymoon for 2 or 3 days at a favorite destination, District Health Officer V.H. Mohite was quoted as saying by the newspaper. Satara has a population of about 3 million. A recent survey found that the district registered about 25,000 marriages every year, and 87% of the newlyweds had a child in the first year of marriage. Authorities hope that if 20% of the couples take up the offer, the birth of more than 4,000 babies could be delayed every year. Of course, I guess when they get the second honeymoon, it's due 9 months after that. Anyway, but India, with 1.1 billion people, is the world's second most populous nation. But with an annual population growth rate of 1.7%, it's expected to overtake China by 2025. A final baby story. Dominican Republic mulls ban on bizarre names. Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic is considering a ban on unusual monikers following an increase in the number of names based on car brands, intimate body parts, and other things. The names range from the bizarre, like Dear Pineapple or I Love You Lover, to the commercial Mazda Altagracia and Toshiba Fidelina. A judge with the Central Electoral Commission said such names should be rejected because they are confusing and give no indication of a person's gender. Jose Angel Aquino recently submitted the proposal. The commission is expected to consider it sometime this year. Judge Aura Celeste Fernandez said Tuesday that officials should instead meet with parents and explain the consequences of such names. I've got a couple of stories that I guess are in the hapless robbers category. Tobacco spit leads to charges in Wisconsin safe theft. A tobacco chewing habit led to charges against two men accused of stealing a safe that was bolted to the floor of a Town of Campbell tavern. A criminal complaint said a DNA profile was developed from a sample taken from the trail of chewing tobacco spit leading away from the Sure Bear Tavern after the theft on February 5th. The DNA matched a 21-year-old man who was charged Monday with burglary, theft, criminal damage to property, and possession of drug paraphernalia. The complaint said a search of his vehicle found a receipt for a hotel room rented to another 21-year-old man after the burglary. He was charged Monday with burglary, theft, and criminal damage to property. A fisherman then found the safe February 9th on a sandbar in the Kaskaskia River near Carlisle, Illinois. I guess that was sort of a happy ending. Here's a funny one about a bank robber. A bank teller, this is New Hudson, Michigan, a bank teller apparently flustered a would-be bank robber and foiled a robbery after asking where the suspect's bag was to carry off the money, authorities said. Oakland County Sheriff's Detective Tom Bizio said the suspect entered a Chase Bank branch Monday wearing a hooded sweatshirt, sunglasses, and winter gloves. He handed the teller a small piece of cardboard that read, "Give me your money." He told the teller to hurry up, but when she asked him if he had a bag to put the money into, it must have flustered him. Bizio told the Detroit News for a story Tuesday. He ran off without any cash. People say the man also is a suspect in a completed bank theft later that Monday in Macomb County, and three others in Oakland County in recent weeks. So, on-the-job training. He learns from experience. All right, here's a final bank robber story. Cops seize couple that robbed a bank to marry. This is Lapeer, Michigan. The bank robbery suspects, whom a sheriff offered to wed in jail if they surrendered, have been arrested. The 24-year-old man and 23-year-old woman were found living in a homeless shelter in Cheyenne, Wyoming, after police traced phone calls to a payphone there, Sheriff Sergeant Jason Parks told the Flint Journal. The couple, who lived together in Michigan, were wanted in the September 19th robbery of a Lapeer County Bank and Trust branch in Deerfield Township, about 60 miles north of Detroit. They were arrested without incident and were held in a Wyoming jail pending extradition to Michigan, Parks said. Detectives determined that the robbery money was used to buy wedding rings, pay back rent, and pay the woman's attorney for work done in a child custody case. Lapeer County Sheriff Ron Calanquin on Monday held a news conference at which he offered to marry them if they surrendered before their cash ran out and they attempted another robbery. It was not immediately clear whether the offer still stood if the couple were arrested, as they were, rather than if they surrendered. Officials with the sheriff's office could not immediately be reached early Saturday. An Associated Press story about the sheriff's offer led to Sheriff Calanquin being interviewed by the BBC and Fox News, among others. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're having Good News Week, which is just me without a guest reading stories from around the country and the world that are kind of, you know, inspiring and uplifting and in some cases just goofy. This is in honor of it being Easter week, so I thought good news was in order. I've got a bunch of them here that are generally in the category of the kindness of strangers. And they're from a website called heroicstories.com, just spelled like it sounds, heroicstories.com. And they go back, you know, years in some cases. And they're just submitted by people to this website that are kind of personal stories. This is one from Kimberly Sessions in Decatur, Georgia. It's called Secondhand Sight. Many years ago, I was driving along a desolate stretch of highway late one night when something odd happened to the electrical system in my car. It continued to run, but the headlights, taillights, and everything all went out and wouldn't come back on. I probably should have simply pulled over to the side of the highway then and waited for morning, but I had no assurance that once turned off, my engine would ever start again. Besides, it had only been a few weeks since Michael Jordan's father had been killed while sleeping at a rest stop not 1 hour from where I was at the time, so I was a little nervous about the idea of spending the night alone on the roadside. Don't blame her. In any case, I elected to just keep driving, or creeping, rather, taking care to pull way over onto the shoulder every time the occasional car overtook me in my lane. This went on seemingly forever until one car passed me in the left lane and then slowed to match my speed. That scared me a bit, but with Mr. Jordan's lethal encounter uppermost in my mind, I determined that no matter what happened, I wouldn't stop the car. Instead, I continued resolutely on, trying to ignore both the other car and the butterflies in my stomach. Meanwhile, she had no headlights or taillights or anything, no electronics. Far from trying to force me off the road, though, the person or people in the other car simply slowed down until they were even with the driver's side rear door of my car and then switched on their headlights to high beam. Suddenly, I could see again. The borrowed light from the other car allowed me to see the road well enough to gradually pick up speed until we were cruising down the highway side by side as easy as you please. And it was easy. It's hard to describe how peaceful the night became once I could see it with secondhand sight. I remember noticing that there were fireflies blinking in the fields next to the highway, that our tires made a pleasant sort of high-pitched humming sound, and that the air smelled of warmth and damp even though there was a cool breeze coming in the window. Every now and then another car intruded on the peace, but when it did, my seeing-eye car simply dropped back to pull in behind me before resuming its self-assigned place beside my rear door. We traveled that way for over an hour and a half, passing exit after exit without an open service station. I wondered how long it would be before my mysterious heroes, or hero, would have to leave me to continue my way alone, but they never did. When I finally found an exit with an open truck stop, I pulled off, waving my arm out the window in thanks, but the car followed me up the ramp. Expecting that I would finally have a chance to say thank you in person, I was surprised when the other car passed me without stopping, turned across the overpass, and then re-entered the highway going back the way we'd come. It was only then that I realized those good souls had chosen to go who knows how far out of their way, just to make sure that I got to safety, and with no thought of thanks, reward, or even recognition. To this day, I don't know how many people were in that car, or even what kind of car it was. I never got a clear look at it. I've never forgotten it, though, and my only hope is that whoever you are reading this story now and will accept my long overdue thanks for getting a total stranger home safe and sound. You'll always be my hero. Here's another one from heroicstories.com called Restored to Health. It's by Ruth Edwards, sent in from Texas. In 1951, when I was 10 years old, my family moved to Japan for missionary work. We lived in the city of Mizuho, about 3 miles from Yokota Air Force Base. My parents sent me to the school on the Air Force Base, and because they weren't military people, paid tuition. I was the only non-military student there, which often made me feel shy because I was different. One day when I was 12 years old, a dentist chair was moved into the school gym. All the kids in school had their teeth checked, one class at a time. When it came my turn, I immediately sat in the chair. When I opened my mouth, the dentist took one look and asked me to sit to the side until he finished checking the rest of my class. He said he wanted to talk to me. I was apprehensive at being set to one side. I watched and waited until the dentist came over to talk to me. He was in his early 30s, wore a doctor's jacket over his Air Force uniform, and had a soft, kind smile on his face. He sat down quietly beside me and asked why I hadn't seen a dentist on the base earlier. I explained our situation. He nodded in understanding and asked for my parents' contact information so he could speak to them. I was nervous about having him speak to my parents. I knew he would tell my parents my teeth were in poor condition. I'd already been to a local Japanese dentist who had put beautiful gold fillings in my teeth. Unfortunately, my mouth was full of decay and infection, including underneath the fillings. What a mess! The Air Force dentist obtained permission from his commanding officer to bring me into the base dental office after hours, where on his own time he would fix my teeth. The appointments began right away. There were 22 in all, 2 visits each week. Whew. The first appointments were surgical because I had some badly abscessed teeth. I remember being nervous, sitting in that dentist chair the first day, white paper bibbed in place, looking up at the lights. But the Air Force dentist was kind and gentle. He explained what he was going to do with such a calm demeanor that I felt calmer and trusted that he would take good care of me. I remember how kind and compassionate he was. It must not have been easy to bring my mouth back to health, nor to give up so much personal time, but he did. He saved my teeth, which I still have 60 years later. Those infections, if untreated, could have become life-threatening. I wish I knew that dentist's name. I would love to thank him for saving my teeth and possibly my life. More in the category of kindness of strangers from heroicstories.com. This is called The Rock by Bobby, Oklahoma, USA. As a cashier for a large discount firm, and one of my duties is to take care of the self-checkout registers, there is one cashier for 4 registers, which can be very stressful. The registers are fairly easy to use, but the customer must follow written instructions, or spoken instructions begin if the sequence of events isn't properly followed. Often they aren't followed, and the customer becomes angry with me. One evening in spring 2015 was particularly trying, many customers each purchasing many items through these lines. I found myself having to force my smile, and my hands were clenched into fists in my vest pockets. As I dashed from one, quote, crisis to another, my feet hurt and my head began to ache. All I could see was how stupid my customers were. Why couldn't they simply follow the directions? Scan the item and place it in the bag. How tough is that? I was ready to scream. Suddenly, a small hand tugged at my vest. I looked down, my smile still forced, and was greeted with a genuine smile from a little boy, maybe 4 or 5 years old. Unlike many children who passed through my lines, this child had stayed close to his father and older brother and wasn't getting into things. He held out his hand and said, "This is for you," and gave me a rock. Nothing special, just a piece of gravel, slightly smaller than a golf ball, gray and a little dusty and very warm from being clutched in this small child's fingers. I gave him a real smile in return. I thanked him, and he went back to his father. When his father was putting the last bag in his basket and the boy was busy with his older brother, I asked him if the rock was special and if it needed to be returned. He shook his head and smiled. "It's just a rock from our driveway. We've got 1 million of them." The family finished their transaction and left. As I held that rock in my hand, I began to relax and was able to look at my customers in a more charitable light. My smile was real, and my tired feet didn't hurt as much. I finished the long shift in a much better mood than I had started it. I keep that rock in my vest pocket. Any time I feel frustrated, I still clench my fists and put them in my pockets, where I encounter the rock. It always makes me smile, and I can go on much more easily. I'm sure the boy and his family have been in many times since then, but I would never be able to recognize them. There are simply too many faces going through my line every day. But I will remember that little boy and his act of kindness much longer than I have that rock in my pocket. I hope you're enjoying these. The first time I did a Good News Week show, I asked my listeners to email me and let me know what they thought, whether it was worth doing more. And I got, 20 or so positive emails saying, yeah, it's a good idea. We enjoyed it. And no no negative emails, so I took that to be encouragement to go on, and I hope it's good. I hope you're enjoying it. This one is called In Awe of Kindness by Jennifer Knopf, who's from Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, in April 2016, our local city council passed an ordinance changing pet registration fees. Fees went up drastically for unfixed pets. For a limited time, fees were grandfathered, but if you didn't license your pet in time, you'd pay the larger fee every year. One Saturday, I went to register my dog. My soldier husband was away training, so I had to take all four children. There was a long line. We started getting friendly with the middle-aged couple ahead and a soldier behind us. We traded stories about our pets, and the couple helped entertain my children. After 30 minutes, rain began to drizzle. I put my children's hoods up and tucked blankets tighter around the baby. My two older children stood with me in the rain while my younger ones huddled in the stroller. I feared if we tried to come back the next day, the lines would be even longer. Then a lady ahead of us took my older children under her umbrella. After 20 minutes, the rain poured. The soldier offered to let my three children sit in his visible car and watch a movie. How could I let my children get into a stranger's car when I would have to stay in line? The lady in front of me volunteered to watch the children in the SUV while her husband stayed in line. The soldier turned on his car, cranked up the heat, put in a Disney movie, and came back. The wife took all the children who'd been in line into the car. Now I just had the baby to worry about. My son was getting wet, so I pulled him into my jacket. As he cried, people further ahead turned to look. This must have been outside, huh? I felt embarrassed and foolish. Why hadn't I brought an umbrella? I should have gotten a babysitter. I should try the next day. Suddenly a man called, "Lady, please get that baby inside." I thought he meant go home. Instead, other people spoke, encouraging me to enter the office. Oh, I get it. The line was so long it was outside the office, right? Since only three people fit inside the office, everybody else would be outside longer. I hesitated, but everyone ahead moved aside to clear a path. Once inside, I was given the only chair. Everyone entering stopped to make sure my son was okay. No one seemed resentful. As I watched, a woman approached the window and registered two pets. Taking out her checkbook, she was told the office only took cash, that if she ran to an ATM for cash, they wouldn't let her just come back to the front of the line. Another lady offered her the cash in exchange for the personal check. The first woman accepted in disbelief and gratitude. Then it was my turn. I quickly paid my fee, took my paperwork, and went outside. My children were waiting safely in the warm SUV. I thanked the soldier and the woman who had watched the children. I went home in awe of all the kindnesses I had received and witnessed. Here's another one. And we're doing Good News Week here on American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. I hope you're enjoying these here on Easter weekend. This is called A Journey Home by Tom Snell from California. More than 30 years ago, my first wife and I went through a year's struggle with cancer in our youngest child, 5-year-old Timothy. Finally, in February 1985, the disease, which had spread to his lungs, reached the point where we had to tell Tim, "There's nothing more the doctors can do. Do you want to stay here in the hospital with all your nurse and doctor friends, or would you like to come home?" He said, "I want to come home." We didn't know if we would even make it there, but we bundled him up against the cold and drove 65 miles from Mass General to the small Quaker school in New Hampshire where we taught and which we call home. That's when marvelous things began to happen. First, the high school student from Maryland who had babysat our other children the previous summer arrived on our doorstep. The next day, another student who had graduated flew in from Michigan. Our next-door neighbor spent every day with us, and my wife's sister and parents flew in from Montana. Faculty members from the school came in shifts while other faculty babysat their children. Some came and stayed only a while, filling in where they could. Others came but got freaked out and left. But nearly all contributed something. It was a real community effort. In a couple of days, we had a rotation schedule with pairs of people on 8-hour shifts. Their only job was to be with Tim and to support each other. These pairs were never alone. There was a whole crew cooking, running errands, listening to each other, and helping out in a million ways. We didn't have a lot of beds, so most of us hot bunked. When people needed to sleep, they slept in any bunk that was empty. When someone went off duty, they woke the next crew and crawled into their warm bed. People slept in rotation all over the house. One neighbor arrived to tell us we should send Tim back to the hospital. After spending a half hour in the house, she left, saying, "Now I know why I came. Not for what I thought, but to be transformed by the love and generosity present in this house." Others were affected in similar ways. Finally, after 2 weeks, Tim died peacefully with two wonderful people sitting beside him, holding his hands and talking him through his passage. Tim, as commonly happens, chose the one time in the 2 weeks when both my wife and I were out of the house. Today, 30 years later, I hold each of these wonderful people in my heart. Still grateful for their amazing kind-heartedness and generosity, they helped us survive the most devastating thing that can happen to a parent and transformed a nightmare into a community of love. Well, here's my last one, I think. It's called Learning to Receive by Susan Saunders in Victoria, Australia. With two children in elementary school and one toddler in diapers, mornings were busy. One morning in 1997 was all was well as I headed out carrying my baby, diaper bag, and purse. Just as I stepped through the front door, the baby vomited on both of us. Throwing down diaper bag and purse, I bathed us and changed our clothing. I snagged the diaper bag, ran out, buckled all three children, and drove away. And we arrived as the first warning bell sounded. Then my car died. A janitor heard me trying to restart it and came to assist. We couldn't start it, so this gentleman helped push my car a mile to the garage. The owner never lifted his head, gruffly saying he couldn't look at my car for days. I asked to use his phone to arrange a tow. I found a mechanic, then notified my work. When the towing company asked for a credit card, I went after my purse, only to find I'd left it when I grabbed the diaper bag. Okay, I could bus home on my pocket change and still get the car fixed before the kids finished school. I called for the bus schedule and saw the bus. I hung up and chased the bus a half block before it pulled over. Halfway home, I realized the apartment keys were in the dead car's ignition. I still wasn't worried. A handyman had been working on my place for 3 days, so I wouldn't be locked out. He wasn't there. I asked neighbors. No one had seen him. I sat on the porch with the baby to wait. It was cold, with snow on the ground. I was sitting in snow, holding a wiggly, wet toddler. 2 hours later, I just cried. The neighbors invited me inside, but I just wanted to be alone at that moment of despair. As I sat, a stranger walked past to visit a neighbor. Minutes later, he returned and introduced himself as Dave, the neighbors having filled him in, suggested I get in his truck to see what we could do. While I was reluctant, my older kids would be out of school and worried I hadn't picked them up. After hearing the car's symptoms, Dave stopped and bought spark plugs and a condenser kit, just in case. We picked up my older kids. At the car, he ascertained the problem was the coil. Dave then stuffed myself and my three children into his truck cab and towed the car to his father's junkyard. He grabbed a good coil and fixed my car. I offered to pay him. He utterly refused. He wouldn't let me pay for the tune-up parts, his gas, time, or skills. Dave simply made sure I had directions to get home safely and sent me on my way. Dave didn't know me. He had no reason to care. But he gave his time, skills, and caring to a stranger on that cold, wintry day. Well, this has been Good News Week on American Variety Radio. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a happy Easter. And I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio. It's Good News Week.